Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast all about books and the people who read them. Today, we're talking social media strategies, branding, and books for leaders and entrepreneurs with Callie Cholodenko. Callie is the founder and creative director of Something Social, a social media and marketing company that is constantly navigating and innovating in the world of content. You can connect with Callie and Something Social in the show notes, and you can find details of everything we talk about on today's episode in the link in the show notes as well. Make sure to link up with The Stacks on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. If you follow us, you'll never miss out on upcoming events, fun giveaways, and so much more. If you're in the market for a book recommendation, you've come to the right place. Ask The Stacks is our segment where my guest and I will give you a book recommendation based on your tastes. To participate, email askingthestacks@gmail.com with your name, what you're looking for, and a few books you've liked or not liked. Then we'll suggest books for you live on air. So email askingthestacks@gmail.com. If you love The Stacks and want to support the work we're doing on the show, join The Stacks Pack on Patreon. That's a place where you can contribute to the work we're doing, and you earn special perks just for you and inside access to this show, like our virtual book club and a lot more. So join The Stacks Pack at patreon.com/thestacks. Audiobooks are awesome for you when you want to be reading, but your hands just aren't free. Think driving, folding laundry, in the shower, or packing for your next getaway. Thanks to the folks over at Audible, you can get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you got your podcast and that you leave us a rating or a review. Now it's time for you all to meet Callie Cholodenko, social media guru and founder and creative director of Something Social. All right, everyone. Today we are here with Callie Cholodenko. She is the founder and creative director of Something Social, which is a social media and marketing company that's worked with some of the most major brands out, from Waldorf Astoria to Skechers to Westfield. Callie is a major mover and shaker in the ever-evolving world of content. Callie, welcome to The Stacks.
Thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here.
I'm so excited you're here. I always do people's like professional intro, and then I'm like, can you just tell me about yourself? Because nobody cares.
Totally. So I grew up in Los Angeles, okay. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I had a lot of random internships in everything from being on the set of a soap opera in production, ooh, to fashion PR and nightlife and entertainment and sports, like all over the board. And it wasn't until I graduated and a friend of a friend was randomly hiring in social media that I decided to check it out. This was 6-7 years ago, so it was before everyone and their mom and their sister and their friend, right, worked in social. Okay. But I realized very quickly that social media was where kind of all my interests blended, from photography to content to copywriting and being punny and witty, and then also business development and branding and marketing. And it all just blended together so nicely. And that's kind of when I decided to continue to pursue social media.
So why did you decide to go out on your own?
So this was one where I had been working for this company for about 6 months, and I had a friend who kept saying, you should do this on your own, you should do this on your own. And it was a little bit before the bubble of entrepreneurship. Of course, that already existed, but it was a little bit before kind of everyone was starting their own businesses. Okay. So it seemed scary to me. It seemed like, well, I don't know insurance, and I don't know how to do this thing, and what about payroll? Like, there were all these unknowns to me. And it wasn't until Cycle House, which is a spin studio.
Do you know that I teach spin?
No, I did not know that.
Flywheel.
Amazing. Okay. So the spin studio was like, listen, we need help with social media. We'll give you some spin for free. I was like, done. Can you do a strategy for us? So that's kind of how it started. And I'd never done a strategy before. I made it up.
I don't know what that is.
It was literally like a 6-month game plan, okay, for how they should live and breathe and exist, and what to post and when to post and how to post, and kind of like a guideline that somebody could follow. But it turns out they didn't have anybody who could follow it. Okay. So that turned into a job offer to do their social media and marketing in-house. And I think I just took that as, okay, here's my opportunity. So kind of on a whim, I said, rather than coming for working for you in-house, I'll start my own business, and you guys can be my first client. And that's really how it started. And because there was such a community there, within 2 weeks, I had referrals for a dentist and a dermatologist and then a sports bar and then makeup. And all of a sudden, I had, you know, 6 clients and it was time to hire my first employee.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And you were a baby kind of when you started.
I was 23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did the math because I heard you on Lady Gang a while ago.
Uh-huh.
And in that episode, Becca's like, you're only 26. And I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
I was like, she didn't start her business yesterday. Like, carry the one. Hold on. So you just like went from college to this company, worked there 6 months, and then you were like, fuck this. I can do it myself.
Pretty much. That is exactly how it happened.
And it's still working.
Thank God, knock on wood, it's still going strong. That's obviously amazing. In the last 6 years, social media has changed so much and exploded. So
right.
It was, I always kind of say it was, you know, a combination of ignorance and good timing that led me to be able to create.
Because you
I
weren't
did.
Like freaked out because you didn't
exactly.
know.
I didn't know. And I was like, if this doesn't work, I'll go get another job. No big deal.
You're like, I'm 23. Like,
yeah.
Doesn't everybody fail when they're 23? Right. That's amazing. So before social media, before you were like, I'm going to go work at the social media thing, what did you think you wanted to do with your life?
So growing up in Los Angeles, I didn't know how many jobs existed. Like, that sounds silly, but all my friends' parents were in entertainment or they were in law or they were doctors. And it didn't really click for me until I had internships. Like, oh, somebody can do branding. Oh, there's somebody in charge of not just personal publicity, but brand publicity. And one of my internships was at IDPR.
Okay.
And originally I was on the talent side of things. And when I saw that there was a girl who was working in brand publicity, that was the first time that I was like, wait a minute, this is really cool. You kind of take these brands, you set up activations, you partner them with celebrities, you get their name out there, and the wheel started to turn, I think, then that was a potential avenue I could go, because everything else I did, I had a concept of what events was going to be. I had a concept of what, you know, fashion PR was going to be. And once I got in there, I was like, okay, this is, for whatever reason, not for me.
Right. And you do brands, but you also do people.
Correct. Yes.
For you, is a person a brand?
I absolutely think so. I mean, I think now in this day and age, people are launching companies, are launching podcasts, are launching businesses, and they're building their own brand off of their name. And so ironically, you look at, you know, a lot of A-list celebrities who are well known and they're getting deals, but you look at their social and there's no story, there's no consistency because they're just going off their name. Whereas I think the reason influencers have been so popular is because they're building a super solid brand that if you are a business or you are a brand and you're looking to pay somebody to post for you, you're seeing pretty much on a silver platter, this is the content I am going to get. Whereas you're looking at a celebrity's Instagram, they might have a gazillion more followers, but there's no consistency. And so things are a little less sure of what you're going to get by working with them.
Right. I'm one of those people, I don't really follow celebrities. Like, I'm like not into seeing what's even like really curated celebrities. The like only ones I follow, I think, is like Will Smith, because he's like funny.
He's done a great job. And that's a guy who's built his brand, who focuses on,
and also,
you know,
he's like hired like like film directors to make his like Instagram videos.
Yes. And thank you. If any of my clients are listening, I hope they see and know that there is a film crew and film production following him around.
It's crazy. But like, I'm not super attracted to celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really care. Like, actors, I guess, is more what I mean. But it's true. Like, if someone has like a really great looking feed, if it's like really pleasing, but I'm really into food people.
Yeah.
Cause that's like the hands shit where they're like, oh, I'm like peeling a banana. I'm like, here's how you make your food. And you're like, oh, this is so gratifying.
And I think that's one thing that's so cool about social too, is that you don't have to be everything to everyone and you can really find your niche. And there are some people who want to watch people painting.
Right.
Or there's some people that want to, you know, there's that whole ASMR kind of movement, which freaks me out a little bit. But literally, people have millions of followers for squishing like goo in their hands or poking like a spongy thing because it's, you know, hashtag oddly satisfying to them.
Right, right. And like, yeah, another thing that I love is interior design.
Yes.
Oh my God. Like those like houses just that are like so delicious, like amber interiors.
Amazing.
Her stuff is just so pretty.
Literally goals. If you look through all of my saved like collections on Instagram, it's literally all interior design and inspo and pillows. And
yeah, it's just like, And like, I don't even, it's like not even something that my life is at all, but like, I love looking at those pictures.
Nice to look at. Yeah.
So pretty. But like, yeah, people I'm less into. I don't know why. But so do you know about, since you're on a book podcast, do you know about Bookstagram? Are you familiar with this like niche in the social media world?
I should be, but I am not.
Well, if you're not into book, like if you're not like a book person, like actively booking all the time, but there's people, myself included, who have accounts that are all about books. So like the whole feed is basically like pictures of books, which before I was like, I'm going to do a book podcast, I was like, this is the weirdest place in the world. Like, who wants to look at pictures of books? But turns out books are really beautiful. And like, it's changed the way that publishers even design book covers. Or like, you know, I because of the show, like I talk to a lot of publishers and publicists, and they talk about like, because they send out books for free for review, and like the books that they send out, it's not just about the kind of book, but it's also about how pretty is the cover.
I think you're making such a good point, because people ask us all the time, you know, how do I get people to post about my thing, or how do I get people to post about my restaurant or my nail salon or whatever? And it really comes down to how shareable is what you're creating. Right. And same thing for books. I mean, I know I'll start to see a certain cover everywhere. And because I'm seeing that cover, that color, that orange, that pink, whatever the color might be, I'm like, okay, I've seen this now so many times, I need to read this book. And I think it's actually really great that publishers and publicists and, you know, people in the industry are kind of savvy to that now, because right. there is a piece of marketing that goes into everything.
Right.
And same thing. I mean, you look at a lot of very popular marketing books and they have like a bright yellow cover, or they have something that stands out, so that not only does it show on the shelf, but that it gives you something to be able to take a picture and talk about.
Right. Totally. Yeah. So it's a crazy, it's a crazy world, but it's like the Bookstagram thing. Like many of my listeners are Bookstagram people, so yeah. We talk a lot about it. But, and it's, I think it's just a microcosm of the rest of social media, right? Like that it's like engagement matters, and like you have to use all the different, like, you know, stories and the algorithm and like all the same frustrations that I'm sure that like the people who are on The Bachelorette care about or whatever, yeah. You know, but it's like book specific.
Yeah. And I'm also seeing a lot of like influencers and bloggers will post a page of their favorite book, or yeah. They'll post, you know, of course, quotes are such a big thing on Instagram right. now, but a way to get out of the monotony of just posting a quote is to take a picture of a book, or right. take a, you know, I did that. I'll talk about some of my favorite books, but I've done that before where I'm reading something and it's so inspiring. And rather than just typing it out, there's something about having the actual physical thing in your hand that you can take a picture right. of and post. And to me, you know, aesthetic and creating beauty in the things I see in the world, I think is what continues to drive me to and inspires me to create a feed and edit my photos and do all right. of that. And so if I can find that on a page of the book, then, you know, that's right. great.
Totally. Yeah. What you're saying just made me think of something. So I read maybe back in June a thing that was saying that ebook sales, like Kindle sales, are really down. Compared to where they were like over the last few years. Audiobook sales have been up a lot, mm-hmm. but I think some of that is people are going back to physical books because they're Instagrammable. Like it's not Instagrammable to post your like Kindle. Like totally. Who wants a screenshot of a screenshot? So I wonder if like some of that comes from like, you know, wanting to be able to post. I think also some of it comes from wanting to unplug.
Yes.
And like being stressed and like wanting, like, I don't want my Kindle to do any, like, I don't want any screen right now. I just want paper.
Yes. I think that there's a movement of we're on our screens 24/7. We're on our phones. We're on our computer. And to look at something that's in a way static, that's not glaring at me, that's not creating whatever right. it is that I'm right. seeing all day long, you start to develop like, you know, reaction, like the Pavlov's, you know, dog thing, where you're having a reaction to the thing that's in your hand. And a Kindle could probably produce that for people that are on their phones 24/7.
Right. 'Cause it's connected to the internet.
Yeah.
So like if you're like a news junkie or something, I think you can like get like newspapers yeah. and stuff on it.
Yeah.
I don't have one, but I think that's how they work. I don't know. what do you see as like the new frontier in social media?
It's so tough because people ask me obviously all the time what's yeah. coming, what's next, and I really do follow the trend. So okay. yeah, if in a year something new is there, I'll deal with it when it comes.
Got it.
Right now, of course, video is like the talked about thing. Video, video, video. But I always kind of say if you look at the app itself, you look at Instagram, it's basically handing you on a silver platter what features are going to continue to be most important just by the updates they're making. And right. I think people choose for whatever reason not to pay attention to that. But if you look at Instagram, the two kind of newest there's a lot of newest updates, but two of the big ones are that you can post IGTV directly to your feed. Mm-hmm. So you can see, okay, great. Instagram is favoring IGTV in the algorithm. The more videos I post there and the more that I post that to my feed, the better my content's going to perform. And then number two, they just released the chat feature on Instagram stories where you can actually have like a quote unquote group chat with up to 31 people in your Instagram story.
I thought that update.
And it's brand new. And to me, what that says is the same way that they keep saying Facebook is going into groups. Instagram, they're really trying to get you to cultivate community. Mm. The accounts that have community, the bloggers, the YouTubers, all those people that do so well, it's because they have a cult following. And I think they're trying to show, hey, brands, it's not just about getting to the masses because, hey, everybody's engagement's down. Everybody's getting less likes, less comments.
Is that true? Everyone.
Yes. And everyone's complaining about it saying, I don't understand why I'm not getting the likes anymore. So I think their solution to that is, okay, this mass market, not that it's done, but it's getting harder and harder. So go back to focusing on niche, focus on community, get raving fans. They might be fewer, but they might be more powerful for you and turn into brand ambassadors. So I think continuing to cultivate your niche audience, it's the same reason, you know, podcasts are able to go do live,
right?
You know, the Lady Gang's doing like a lady hang because then they're able to actually see their people in the flesh.
Right. That's so interesting. Why do you think that they are like turning away from like bigger brands or like bigger accounts?
I think one of the problems is that there's just so many people doing cool things on social. Mm-hmm. Back like when Cycle House first started, literally all I had to do was post a good photo and post it consistently and we grew.
Right.
And now there's, I mean, hundreds of millions of accounts that are cool and putting out good content and putting out consistent content. And so it hits like a critical mass, you know, a critical point where, yeah, sure, you can have 10 million followers, but are they engaged? Are they spam accounts? Are they bots? Are they inactive accounts? And so to compare your ratio of how many followers to likes you're getting is just it's problematic for people these days. So the solution is, okay, well, let's go niche and let's go group.
Do you think that people will get frustrated, like, because it's a ton of work to like make an account and make it pretty and engage with people and comment and have new content every day and have your story and your poll and your response and your, you know, like,
yeah, it is.
It's a nightmare. I mean, I do my own social media and I'm literally like, just, I need to make more money so I can hire Callie to like take over because this is exhausting. But do you think that people who do their social media, like maybe they have a small brand or like they have a small thing that they do, but they also like run their actual company and like this and that. Do you think that it's going to discourage them from being on the platforms like because it's so hard and it's not like worth the return on investment?
I do. I think it's a problem that the platforms are going to continue to face. That's also why social media managers is a whole new industry of people. And there's so many ways of, I mean, we see it all the time. There's so many ways of managing an account from, you know, the massive companies that charge 20 grand retainers to, you know, the girl that just graduated college who says, give me $100 a month and I'll run your Instagram. And part of the problem is it's really the wild, wild west. There's no standard. There's no consistency. So we'll take over accounts and I'm like, what was your company doing before this?
Right.
And then on the flip side, you know, there's only so much that we can do given certain resources. So I do think that it's a problem that the platforms are facing. I don't think it means this account won't be active, but who's managing that account? Is the owner of that account even active? Are they checking it? Are they on their DMs? So yeah, it's certainly, you know.
Because I feel like a lot of accounts that I follow, like in the book world, have stopped posting to their feed. Mm-hmm. They're kind of just like over it. They're like, I don't really post, like, it's not fun anymore. It's not like what it used to be. So I wonder if we're going to see like more of that in other spheres.
Well, I think that comment of it's not what it used to be, I hear it all the time.
Right.
And part of me wants to just say to everyone, like, get over it. It is what it is.
Right, it's always
It's always changing. You can't hold on to what a platform was 2 years ago that's only been around for, you know, yeah, exactly. Like, so you have to kind of be flexible and fluid. And sure, yes, every time the algorithm changes, is it a bummer because we have to re-strategize for all of our clients? Of course.
Right.
But at the same time, that's the industry that we've chosen. It's not TV. It's not radio.
Right.
It's not billboards, you know?
Right.
And if anything, social is is the one platform that you can have a direct two-way conversation with your audience. Like, right. you can, in what other world can a random person that's in another country DM you and get a response,
right.
you know?
Right.
So I think that if people are using it for that reason to engage with their audience, it's the most magical way of doing so in marketing.
Yeah.
You just have to use it right.
That makes so much sense. I love that. You're so positive. I love it. You're like, no, it's working. Don't worry. I mean, I guess you have to be because that's like your whole life.
But we have this conversation every day.
How do you know when an algorithm's changed?
You can kind of tell. You can see just by, I mean, we're tracking engagement every single day. Right. So we're seeing how content is performing and we can see, okay, 2 weeks ago, this was happening and nothing has changed on our end. So clearly something has changed on their end. When you're testing things on your own side, you're testing video, ads, influencer, you can kind of see the needle move a little bit differently. But when you're keeping your strategy very consistent and the engagement or the reach or the impressions is changing so drastically week over week, it's kind of a given.
And then how do you figure out what they're looking for? Because the algorithms are kind of like looking for you to do something.
Right. So it's a little bit of reading between the lines. I mean, we do a lot of research. I read a lot of blogs. You know, my team is constantly like in the interwebs reading what people are saying about the platforms. But also, I think, again, paying attention to what the platforms are doing themselves. Like when Instagram first came out with the feature where you could like somebody's comment, it's like, ding, 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 they want you to engage with your audience. So I'm going to go a step further. Instead of liking it, now you can respond to everybody's comment. Then it switched to where your response was like immediately under that comment rather than at the bottom of every single comment. So you kind of do have to read between the lines, but if you pay attention to what the platform itself is doing, it kind of clues you in.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And what social media blogs are you like into? If people like want to be reading what you're reading.
Yeah, we read like TechCrunch. I read Later actually has a really great blog. They have a lot of good content that they put out there. Checking Instagram, you know.
Okay, awesome. Okay, we're gonna move slightly away from social media, slightly, because I feel like it's gonna infiltrate all your answers, I think, or some of them at least. And we're gonna move towards books. So we do this thing on the show called Ask the Stacks, where someone will send us an email. They're asking us for a book recommendation. And I have to warn you, this week, I'm gonna fail big time. So it's a warning. This email, and they send the email to askingthestacks@gmail.com. So if you guys want your book recommendations read on the air, email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com, and myself and whoever my guest is will do our best. So this week it comes from Kendra from Boston, and she says, I really enjoy your podcast and it has actually made me start reading more. Yay, Kendra. I'm looking for a book that is basically a romantic comedy in book form. I read a lot of Emily Giffen. My favorite being Something Borrowed and Something Blue. I like light stories, nothing too devastating. So Kendra, like, thanks for emailing. If you've listened to the show, you know that literally that's the opposite of everything that I read. So all the books I'm going to recommend to you are truly books I've not read, but heard good things about from people that I trust. So one is The Kiss Quotient by Helen Huang, and it's a rom-com. And it's like, I think a little steamy. That's what everybody says. It's like a little steamy, which like, hello, here for it. And then Jasmine Guillory is a romance writer and she's written three books. So her first one was The Wedding Date. The second one was The Proposal. And the third one was The Wedding Party. And I haven't read it, but Renee at Book Girl Magic is obsessed, obsessed, obsessed with her. So I co-sign anything Renee says. Then my last one just came out. It's called Red, White, and Royal Blue. And it's by Casey McQuiston. And it is a story of like the first son in America and a royal prince who fall in love. It's like a gay rom-com, which I think like is kind of hot. So those are my three for you. I haven't read them, but I do own some of them. So they're like books that maybe I would consider reading. So basically you have to read them all, Kendra, and then tell me if any of them are any good. Okay, your turn, Callie.
Okay, this is a tough one because I don't think rom-com is also my necessary category. I actually have heard that Red, White, and Royal Blue is a good one.
I've heard so it's really good.
I'm going to second that.
Okay.
Also, I've heard The Flat Share by Beth O'Leary is a good read.
Okay.
And Crashing the A-List by Summer Heacock.
Okay.
Another one that's not totally different category, but I do think it's a really light read. And even though it's not a rom-com, it has, I don't know, maybe it could satisfy some sort of similar
vibe.
Is The Universe Has Your Back by Gabrielle Bernstein.
Okay.
And it's totally in a different category, but there's definitely some elements of romance. Also just falling in love with yourself and self-exploration, self-love, self-healing. So it's a light read. It's really kind of motivating.
And you've read
good
it.
Good vibes. And I have read it.
So yes. Of all the books we just recommended, it's the only one either of us has read. So probably start there. okay, amazing. Let's do it. We're going to go to the stacks questions. We're starting where we always start. Two books you love and one book you hate.
Okay, two books I love, Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes.
We did that on the show.
Love.
Yes, yes, yes.
So good. And then also The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra.
Okay, yeah. Of course, classic.
Classic. A book. Okay, so I don't have a book that I hate.
Okay.
One book that I would like to – I've been trying to read it because everyone suggests it and I've heard so many amazing things, and it's The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. Mm-hmm. I have tried to read it. There are so many F-bombs in the beginning of this book, and I don't know if I've just become more sensitive to it. And I was listening to it on audio, so that might have done something different. So I don't hate it, but I haven't been able to get over the hump of reading it yet.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That book is like a turnoff to me, just a cover. I don't know. I don't like the asterisk thing. It like annoys
me. It's intense.
Yeah, I'm just like, eh. And also, I feel like right now, like in the world, we're in such a place where people like don't care.
Yeah.
Or like feel like it's too hard to care because there's like so much to care about. And I just don't like that message.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm with you. I'm curious. That's why I wanted to read it, because I'm curious to know if the title is misleading.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You guys will have to let me know.
Yeah. It won't be me. Someone else will let you know. We're linking to all of Callie's social media accounts and stuff in the show notes so you can really reach out to her and harass her and tell her how much you love the book or whatever. What's the last really like great book you read?
One of the books that I think has had a really big impact on me that I read pretty recently, at least within the last year, is Thrive by Arianna Huffington. Okay. And I think, again, just with the way that we are right now, we're so plugged in. We're on our phones 24/7. I think it was a good kind of check for me to see what it really is doing to us. And I'm in this world of hustle, 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 and whoever's sleeping the least is doing the best.
Right.
And, you know, who can work the hardest and the longest. And especially for me as a business owner, sometimes I feel like if my team sees that I'm enjoying myself, they're going to think, oh, she doesn't work and we're doing all the work, where chances are they're probably thinking the opposite of like, girl, go take a minute, take over. You know? But I think we do, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself to constantly be busy and working, and reading her book was a really good reminder to take a step back, to slow it down, to see that doing it the opposite way can actually be more beneficial. There were a lot of good posts, a lot of good stories came with, you know, quotes from that book. So,
well, how do you unplug? What do you do? How do you get rid of your phone?
Meditation is a huge thing for me. The last probably 2-3 years, I really, really have gotten into meditation, and I genuinely don't know how I would get through my day, my week, my life without it. Just having that moment in the morning, you know, I try to do it every morning for 20 minutes.
Oh, that's a long time.
If I'm, thank you. If I'm hustling or I'm running or, you know, I woke up late, then I'll make a point to do it at night. Every once in a while I skip a day, not perfect. Mm-hmm. But having that time to just sit and be and go inward. I think a lot of people say, I can't, you know, stop my thoughts for 20 minutes. And my response to that is always like, that's not the point. The point isn't to shut your brain off.
Right.
The point is to just be and settle and get your brain into some sort of alternate patterning for a minute. Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, go, go, go all the time.
Right. And do you like set times in your day where you're like, no phone, no screen?
As much as I would like to say, I've been saying for the past 2 years since reading Thrive that I'm not going to bring my phone into my bedroom. And I'll go through like a week at a time where I'll plug it in the other room, and then I'll go into my bedroom. But, you know, it definitely gets the best of me, and I take it in. And I watch myself scroll for endless amounts of time doing nothing at all at night. So I currently don't have any quote unquote no screen time.
Yeah.
But I really, a goal of mine is to put it away before I go into my room.
Because you'll have to find a balance that works for you. And it's probably not realistic for you, someone who like that's so much part of your life, to just be like, don't have it.
Right.
Like it seems crazy because that's your world.
Yeah, it's tough, especially with clients. You know, they're texting me all the time and they're expecting a response. That's part of the service, is that we're always available. And, you know, social media is not, it's not brain surgery, but at the same time, if a post goes up that wasn't supposed to go up, or something is said that wasn't supposed to be said, it is an emergency to our clients. Or if there's a customer service issue and we don't see it for 24 hours, like, that's a problem.
Right.
So obviously I have my team and they're amazing and they handle what they handle. But there definitely is an element of needing to constantly be reachable.
Right. And how, wait, how many employees do you have?
11.
Wow. Holy shit. That's a lot of people. Oh my God.
They're awesome.
Back to books. What are you reading right now?
So I am currently reading, I just started Radical Candor by Kim Scott.
I don't know that.
It is about, it's about being a powerful leader and being an effective leader, but also not losing yourself in it. And so not losing your sanity. So I think there's a theme here, of how to effectively lead a team and manage a team without going crazy. Just started that. And then I've been reading Rubies in the Orchard by Linda Resnick.
I don't know that either.
That one was a recommendation to me by somebody actually who works at the Wonderful Company. They started like Palm Wonderful, Fiji Water. And she just has such a unique view on kind of how to find like your niche and why, you know, where to invest and where to spend your time and your energy and your resources that maybe other people would think is crazy. So far I've been really enjoying it.
I'm so excited you're here, because I just feel like you're going to tell us so many books that we don't normally talk about. I'm so excited. Let's see. Oh, what are some things maybe you're looking forward to reading?
I still have not read Shoe Dog, and it's been on my list for so long. And I think they might be making it a movie. That's the Phil Knight one about Nike. Yeah. So that's been like on my to-do list for so long. So I really want to commit to reading Shoe Dog.
That's the book that like every like hot guy it's like, oh, I'm this hot guy, just read Shoe Dog. Yeah, I just really love Nike. Like, okay, guy, you and no one else in the world. Did you discover Nike on your own, hot guy?
Right. Totally.
Not that unattractive men don't read it also. I just feel like it's like very like, I'm on The Bachelor.
It's like a thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Can you tell The Bachelor's really on my mind? Do you watch The Bachelor?
I wish I did. I don't. Oh, I see the social, everything.
It's really on my mind because we're recording right now on July 22nd, and this week is like the second to last week.
Oh, boy.
So I'm like really can't wait for tonight.
Oh, boy.
Anyways, how do you pick a book? Like, how do books come into your world? Is it through social media? Is it like friends' recommendations? Do you read about them elsewhere?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So definitely friend recommendations, also business advisor and people that I look up to in the business world. You'll sense a theme here with all of my books. Yes. Most of them are towards some sort of business education. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And so that's kind of what I found through all of these books. Also podcasts. I really like The Skinny Confidential. Her podcast is great, and she's a really nice balance of health and wellness, but also she's very savvy. Her and her husband are very business savvy, and they have a ton of great book recommendations.
Oh, nice.
I know her husband's a big reader. Also Tim Ferriss. That's another podcast I listen to. Okay. I'll Google, you know, Tim Ferriss book list.
Nice.
So yeah, podcasts and friends.
We love podcasts around here, especially ones that talk about books. What was the last really good book that was recommended to you?
I don't know if this was the last, but it was actually one of the first business books that was recommended to me that I think is worth mentioning, which is The E-Myth Revisited.
Okay.
It's by Michael E. Gerber, and that really breaks down, I mean, it's The E-Myth Revisited, the myth of being an entrepreneur. Mm. And it kind of demystifies this, like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and start a business and run around and like live my life. And it's like, no, there's the entrepreneur who has the vision, but there's also like the doer of the job. And then there's the manager, and then there's the visionary. And for example, if you're a baker and you make, you know, you bake cakes and you work at this bakery and you're like, I'm going to do this on my own, you're probably not going to spend much time baking, because now you have to lease a place and hire, and you're dealing with taxes. And so it just kind of debunks the idea of I'm going to go out and like frolic in the world as an entrepreneur. And I think it's an important read for people that are making that decision for themselves.
Yeah. So next week we're going to talk about Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson. She's the creator of Create and Cultivate, among like other things. After reading her book, I've learned much about her. But I think we'll talk a bunch about like entrepreneurship and all that next week. So we'll kind of pause this conversation, because I have a lot that I want to talk about. Yeah. So next week, and that week, next week we won't have spoilers because there's really nothing to spoil in the book. So if you haven't read it yet, or you're on the fence, or you're kind of like want to know what's in the book, definitely tune in next week. Okay. What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
I would say probably E Myth Revisited. Yeah. Don't to repeat my answer,
that's okay.
But I think people ask me for book recommendations kind of in the vein of business advice. Okay. So I'm going to go with that one.
And it was just, it really was like powerful for you. Like,
yeah.
Said.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to read it.
Cool.
I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
or
you
something.
Are.
I don't know. Still working on that.
Oh, and I should also mention where I get my book recommendations, obviously, is the Stacks podcast.
Thank you. We didn't pay her to say that, but hashtag not SpawnCon. What about reading goals? Like, do you prioritize reading in your life? Do you set goals on how many books you want to read, or like how many pages you want to read, or what kind of books, or anything like that?
I would like to be more consistent, I think, with my book goal setting. Right now, I kind of save books for vacation.
Okay.
And as much as I would like to say I'm traveling all the time, I'm really not. Yeah. But I do find that when I'm on vacation is when I do feel a little bit less pressure to be doing something else.
Right.
And that's definitely a self-inflicted pressure. I'm not the busiest, most important person in the world.
Sure.
Of course, I could be dedicating an hour, 2 hours a week to reading the same way I do to meditation.
Right.
But right now with my downtime, it's either spent like knocked out or I am, you know, with friends or family or meditating. So
right.
I would say for goals, one of my current goals is honestly just to increase my reading. My Pilates instructor, shout out Pilates by Amanda, is doing a book club. And I think
cute.
It's such a cute idea for people in like various, you know, places or ways of knowing each other to start doing little book clubs. So
yeah.
I'd like to bring that a little bit more into my life.
That's so good. My advice always for people who want to read more is like what you do with your meditation. Like set a time. What I do is I put my phone on airplane mode. Like especially recently, I've had a really hard time focusing. So what I'll do is I'll set my timer for like 1 hour because sometimes I fall asleep when I read.
Yeah.
Sorry, it happens even to a professional reader. But I'll put my phone on airplane mode or do not disturb and I'll put the timer on and I'll get really comfy and I'll get like all my snacks or whatever I want, my water, my tea, whatever it is, my blankie, go outside, get in the hammock, whatever it is, I'll get all set up and I click start and then it's like I have 1 hour.
Yeah.
But if you do that for 20 minutes, but the key is like you have to go pee before, you have to get your water, you have to get your snack, you have to do all the things that are going to get in your way before so that when you set that time, you're like, okay, this is my 20 minutes of reading. And you'd be shocked how much, like, I don't, people are always like, how do you read so much? And I'm like, I don't read more than an hour a day, probably, like all in. Some days more, but like, I've read 60 books this year and I
wow.
pretty much read about an hour a day, like on average, and that's it. But I take my hour very
wow.
seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, that's it. It's my hour. And sometimes I have to break it up, but like, it is the same kind of thing, like a fitness class or whatever. You're not going to go, if you're not scheduling your flywheel class, or if you're not, you know, making sure that your running shoes still fit and all of that, and like setting yourself up for success, you won't, it doesn't work. So
I love that. And I think exactly like you said, it's the same way for you schedule a meeting, you schedule your workout routine,
right.
you schedule your date night, you schedule whatever
meal
it is.
Prep, whatever.
Meal prep, yeah. yeah, you have to do it. And the way that you're describing it too is like you're creating a little sanctuary for yourself
yeah.
and a little, you know, peaceful environment
right.
to then be able to just sit down and read.
Yeah.
I love that.
And some people, like, I can't always read in my bed because I will definitely fall asleep. But like I tell people, if you have space in your house and you're a person who needs like a special space, like get a special reading chair and put like a
yeah.
cute little table and get like a lamp that you'd love and like the your reading blankie and like make your space. Cause it's just like every other habit. You can get into it and like once you get your stride, you're like, oh great, like reading time, I can't wait. Like now if I don't read like a page in a day, I'm like, I have to read at least one page today. Like I have to read every single day.
I so love that.
I'll be like in bed, like my husband will be like, you're tired. I'm like, I know, I just have to read one page.
One page.
Because I'm crazy. Are there any books that you reread? Are you a rereader?
I'm not much of a rereader. I'm trying to think if there's ever been a book that I've reread. I've thought about rereading Year of Yes just mm-hmm. in like few, like as I was reading it, I was daydreaming about reading it like again in future. Same thing with Thrive, actually. I said to myself while I was reading this, do yourself a favor and remember to read this at least once a year, because I know that, you know, there's so much. This is the other problem with me and reading. There's so much content I'm consuming all day long, whether it's social or work or this or that or movies or TV or podcasts or whatever it is, that I think it goes like in one ear, out the other. Yeah. And these books that have had a pretty profound impact on me, I don't want to lose that.
Right.
And, you know, it's not realistic to think I'm going to remember every single thing that I read.
Right.
But during both of those books, I said to myself, make sure you read this once a year.
Do you ever do audiobooks?
Yes.
You should audiobook.
Yes.
Them.
I actually did audiobook Year of Yes.
Okay.
And I love an audiobook, especially because, like, if I, again, if I'm on vacation in the sun, you just lay down.
Right.
It's like you're looking at the world and listening. Or same thing, driving. I'm in my car a lot to and from meetings. And I find that sometimes if I'm listening to like a feel good or something that's a little deeper in the car, by the time I get to a friend's house or a meeting or whatever, I'm in a better mood because I've just listened to that. So
I read Year of Yes, but I want to go back, I think, and listen to it. Audible is one of our sponsors. So if you're not an audiobook person yet and you want to be, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks and you get a free audiobook. So just thought you should know that. Let's see. So obviously you're into business books and like kind of like business books, also like maybe like self-helpy, not like self-help. I feel like it's such a negative connotation, but kind of.
Yeah, that genre.
That genre, self-business advice kind of thing. Are there any books or genres that you don't read that you're like not into?
I never really got into like the crime novel thing, or like mystery, murder, that type of genre.
Yeah.
Not because I'm anti, I just never got into it.
Right.
I watch that type of show sometimes on TV, but from a book perspective, I never quite got into the crime novel.
Me neither. I'm into true crime, like a real story I'm into, but I'm not into like Girl on a Train or whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
Not into that. How do you organize your books? Or do you?
I have them by, let's see, I do them by size.
Okay.
In some bookshelves, some like decorative books, I organize by color.
Okay.
Or I organize by either color or size.
Okay.
And then novels, like, you know, reading books, I do by size.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never heard of do by size before.
Because I like, you know, I don't like when they're all over the place.
I do color, but my colorful books are in the other room. My black and white books are in the room near where we're sitting. But now I have not enough shelves, so now they're just stacked up everywhere. Shit happens. let's see. How do you like to be when you're reading? Like, what's your ideal reading setup? Obviously on vacation. Are you on the airplane? Are you at the beach? Are you in a cabin?
Definitely relaxed. I like to be relaxed when I'm reading. Or in transit, really, those two things.
Yeah.
So love a book on a plane.
Love a book on a plane.
Love a book. I don't really take trains that much, but if I did, I'd probably like one. Mm-hmm. Uber, same thing. I'll listen to.
I would say, can you read in the car?
Audio. I'll do audio. Okay. Yeah, I can't read. I'll get nauseous.
People who can read in the car, I am so jealous of you humans.
Yep.
It's unreal. Not driving, obviously, passenger seat.
Correct. That would be quite a skill.
Yeah, no, it's so amazing.
I do audiobooks in the car, on a plane, and then vacation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. And what about, let's see. Oh, I love these. Okay. What's the last book that made you cry?
Okay, so I don't cry. Like, I don't even know that I've cried in a movie. And I feel like I'm like that episode of Friends where Chandler like can't cry because nothing makes me cry when it comes to movies or reading. So I cannot remember a book.
That's okay.
I know it's happened.
Okay.
But I cannot remember a book that has made me cry.
Do you cry in life? Like in frustration or anger or sadness? Like, are you just pure no cry?
My crying has been on a similar trajectory as my meditation.
Okay.
So the more I think in touch with my own emotions I have become, the more I am open to crying. open to crying.
I feel like open to crying sounds like open to meeting someone and open to a relationship.
Historically, I've cried really only out of like deep overwhelm.
Okay.
So when I get to it, when I hit a breaking point of like, okay, I can't do this anymore, or stress or fear of failure, that's usually when, okay, the tears come out. But lately I've been very proud of myself. I've been crying because I am happy for a friend, oh, or I've cried even if I've heard sad news. Historically, I'd just not, but a little bit more these days.
Well, you're getting older. I think this happens
maturing
too.
Maturing.
I know. Yeah. You're still a baby, but you're maturing. I feel like as I get older, I cry more. And like my mom and my aunt, all they do is cry. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's like, oh, it's Wednesday.
My mom's the same.
Yeah, I feel like as you get it's older, like maybe you have kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
What about the last book that made you angry?
Ooh, I think The Subtle Art of, that kind of made, I was like, ugh, I'm annoyed with this. So sorry.
Okay. What about the last book that brought you joy?
Year of Yes was so fun. I hate that I keep saying the same book. Sorry, guys. Such a repeat offender. But I was like dancing along with that book.
That book
I was
so
just
good.
On. And I think also listening to it with her voice, mm-hmm, and like her personality. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, yes, like I love this.
You have to go back and listen. We did an episode on
I'm going
and
to.
It's really, it's a really fun. We did it with one of my best girlfriends. We grew up together and she's like a stylist in LA and she's like crushing it, but has two daughters. And it's like, it's really good.
Amazing. I will listen.
Not to toot my own horn. It's really mostly about Ashley. But what's a book where you felt like you learned a lot?
Well, we're going to talk about Work Party because, okay, I think there were some gems in that one. And then I also think Ruby's in the Orchard so far that I've been, okay, listening to. I feel like I'm learning a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, what about a book that you're embarrassed to have read?
Okay. So I feel equal parts embarrassment and also like I was ahead of the trend on this one. Okay. So when I was reading it, I was not embarrassed. It wasn't until later and it became, okay, what it became. But I read all of the 50 Shades.
Yes.
And I remember distinctly, I was abroad in London. It was my junior year of college. Okay. And my friend was like, my mom, which is now funny thinking about it, she's like, my mom said we have to read this book. And we were, lol. And we were abroad and we were in London and like we had a lot of downtime, you know, some of the times we were traveling a lot on planes a lot. And I was like, you know what? Sure, let's give it a go. And I swear to God, like no one had heard of this book. It was not a thing. Like I was reading it on the subway because no one knew what
you
it was.
You weren't embarrassed yet.
I was so obsessed with these books that I would go to, like, we'd go to like a group dinner and I would go to the bathroom and like read a couple pages.
Oh my God.
Or I would be late to dinner or late to class or late to something because I was like,
God,
I just need two more pages.
Oh my God.
It was, I honestly cherished that time before it became what it became because after that I was like, oh no, whatever. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
But when I read those books, man,
I love them. I read
into
them.
Into it.
So not me. And I read them on vacation. And I was very into it.
Very into it.
It was good. What about a book that you're embarrassed that you've never read?
You know, I think there are some like classics that everyone, mm-hmm, will, you know, I don't have one on the top of my, okay, head, but I read it in college or I don't remember reading it. There's a lot of those that I'm like, I know I read this book, man, but I can't remember it. So there are some times where people are in conversation. They're like, oh yeah, that one's a classic.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, totally
love it. No, that's cool. I feel like that my list of books that I'm embarrassed about not having read or like books that I feel like I should have read by now,
yeah,
is so incredibly long that I've just, and now I'm to the point where I'm like, meh. Like I'm probably never going to read it just, yeah, to make a point. Like I haven't read that in your face.
Oh, do you have any favorite books that were assigned to you in school that you do remember? Oh, yes. The Outsiders.
Oh, so good. What, do you remember what year you read that? Do you have any recollection?
Oh man. I know it was high school.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah. I know it was high school or maybe it was younger than
I think it was younger.
I think it was fifth grade. Now that I think of fifth or sixth grade.
That's I think when I read it.
Yeah. I think it was fifth or sixth grade. I don't remember, but that one
so good.
I remember really liking it.
Have you
book.
Seen yeah. the movie?
No, I haven't
it's
seen
like
the movie.
All well now they're all old, but it was like I think Tom Cruise is in it. It's like young Tom Cruise and like young it's like they're babies then. But now they like all grew up to be like famous actors.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen it in years.
I have to go see it.
But I remember when after we read it, like I saw it a few years later and I was like, he's famous.
Yeah.
Like, he's a stud.
Yeah.
if you were a teacher, what would you assign in school? Is there a book?
Ooh. Well, based on the theme of my book that I'm sharing now, I do think I would assign a few that weren't necessarily fiction or nonfiction, but a little bit more along the lines of like personal development, because I think that's something that people don't start. And granted, when you're young, it's newer. You don't really know who you are. But I think to plant the seed of like, no, figure out who you are rather than going outside of yourself and looking at, you know, my friend's doing this, especially these poor kids with social media. Now I don't even know.
I can't even imagine.
So to have that influx of like what other people are doing and other people are wearing and other people seeing, I do think it's really important that the concept of like discover who you are for yourself is brought up a lot. Yeah. So I would probably do like a personal development something.
For people who are listening, who are parents of like teenagers, or for not that teenagers listen to this podcast, I would be kidding myself if I thought I was big in like the 16 to 18 demo, but,
what do you say to them about social media? Like, how can they protect their kids? But also, like, you kind of want your kid to have social media so that they know how to do it by the time they, like, get to college. And, like, businesses look at social media accounts when they hire. And, like, if you don't have one, that's as much of a red flag as if you're, like, doing a bump of coke off a stripper. Like,
right.
Like, both things are bad.
Well, I think it's a reality that as technology changes, you know, I'm sure our parents' parents felt that way with, like, TV. Right. And I'm sure people felt that way with the radio. Like, every time there's a new technology, I think there is a concern. I mean, even, you know, there's a lot of different genres of podcasts. There's a lot with swearing and this and that. So any media consumption is going to affect how your children grow and age. I think with social media, it's important that you're at least having the discussion of, okay, you're seeing a highlight reel. I think that's the piece that people forget is you're not seeing people's worst days. You're seeing their highlight reel, their best moments, their successes, their, you know, you're not. And now I get it. There's a movement of like Instagram versus reality, but even those are curated.
Those are bullshit
too. Yeah. And even, you know, there is a movement now. I love this. The Gen Zers are doing like the anti-aesthetic. So instead of posting like beautiful curated photos, they're posting like bad, like poorly edited, like not well lit, like selfies. But there's a whole, I mean, there's a lot that to be said about that too. So I think the biggest thing is to be having the conversation with your kid about, you know, what they're seeing versus what the reality of the world is, and just be have an honest dialogue about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough.
I know I'm like terrified. I don't want to have kids. Okay, we'll do this last one. So I stole this from the New York Times. It's one of my favorites. If you could require the current president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
Oh.
It's a hard one. I know.
That is a really hard one. Mm-hmm. Like, Be a Nice Human. Is there a book on
we
that?
Need to write that book.
Let's write that book. Let's go with Thrive.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go with Thrive.
Be a Nice Human also.
Also Thrive.
You're going to write that book for us. Perfect. So that we can send it over there. Okay, well, that's it for us today. I will link to everything Callie talked about in the show notes, as well as Callie's social and her social media account for her business, Something Social. And then next week, we'll be back to discuss Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson. It's a business advice life. I don't know. It's like kind of a few genres maybe mixed up in one. Very woman-focused, lady-focused, girl power type vibe. So we'll be doing that next week. We won't have spoilers, so don't worry if you haven't read it and you don't plan on it. You can check it out, and then you're going to hear our episode and want to read it, so that'll be easy for you to do. Callie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay, and we will see you guys in the stacks. All right, that does it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you again to Callie Chulodenko for joining us. Callie will be back next week to discuss Work Party by Jacqueline Johnson. Everything we talk about on today's episode can be found in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Remember to get your book recommendations read on air by sending us an email and asking thestacks@gmail.com. To redeem your free 30-day Audible trial and free audiobook download, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas, and I will see you in the stacks.